Well, hello and welcome to Enlighten Networking's Friday morning call, 30 Minutes of Wisdom. This is Gregory Mascari, and I want to thank everyone for joining us here on our call, whether you're listening live or on the replay. Rob and I started these regular weekly calls quite a while ago. Kind of our way is paying it back, or really, more accurately, I think, paying it forward for all the wonderful people we've met, all the lessons we've learned, and you know, and to just share the love, share the light, and share the wisdom, really. So every week we invite inspired authors, teachers, and enlightened beings to share 30 minutes with us. And what I'd like to do is turn this call over to my partner in life and my beloved wife, Robin, who's going to introduce our special speakers this morning. So good morning, Robin.
Well, thank you, Gregory, and thank you for doing all that you do that makes this work so beautifully. And welcome, everybody. Thank you for taking the time to be with us. So today, we have a two-for-one treat to share the transformational power of humor. Our guests today are, and I'm going to say individually and collectively, internationally known authors, humorists, workshop leaders, active transpartisan politicians, and remember that one, syndicated columnists, authors of numerous books, CDs, on the radio regularly, and truly, truly devoted to enlighten and brighten our world. So they come to us disguised as, they create comedy disguised as wisdom, and wisdom disguised as comedy, have been my friends for many years, and literally have touched my mind and heart and funny bone a lot. So it is my pleasure to welcome the inseparable partnership, Steve Behrman and his alter ego, Swami Beyondananda. Good morning and welcome.
Well, thank you so much for that great introduction. And yes, there are two of us inhabiting one body. And the Swami and I, through the magic of being able to change costumes on the radio instantly, we are both here today.
Well, great. So we'll start out with Steve, because we're going to be interviewing both Steve and Swami this morning, and we'll get a little combination, I think, too. So, Steve, would you start out and talk a little bit about, because we're going to start out with, as Woody Allen would say, you know, have you achieved the state of total heaviosity? You know, what is the function of humor in these heaviosity and serious times we have?
Well, humor is a very, very powerful tool for changing perspective. And, I mean, physiologically, there are some absolute changes that take place when we laugh. And you may laugh at that, but the fact is that simply by laughing, and even by smiling, we actually change the chemistry of the body. No matter how you're feeling, if you turn the corners of your mouth upward in a smile, which the Swami would call feeling the levitational pull, what happens is your body thinks that you're happy, and it produces hormones that are actually beneficial. So every time we smile, every time we laugh, our physiology changes. But the power of humor goes much further than that, because it actually changes our perspective on life. And, you know, we are living in very complex times. We've been inundated with so much information that often we don't know what to do with that information. And a lot of people in this culture are feeling stressed out, and stress can be stressful. We cannot stress enough how stressful stress can be. And so what happens is we feel that we are at the effect of all of this complexity. And laughter and humor collapses situations, collapses the duality. And I'll give you an example. A lot of jokes have threes, one, two, three. A minister, a priest, and a rabbi. Okay, so a minister, a priest, and a rabbi are having a conversation. And the conversation is about legacy. How do you want to be remembered? You know, when you're in your casket there, what do you want people to be saying over your casket? Well, the minister thinks about it. He says, I want people to be saying he was a pillar of his community and a great family man. The priest thinks about it. He says, I want people to be saying he was a leader of his flock and a holy man. And the rabbi thinks about it. He says, I want people to be saying, look, I think he's moving. So, You see, we live in a culture of duality. It's either this or that. And humor reminds us that if we want to emerge to a higher evolutionary level, we have to allow for a third way, for something different. So the first two steps, number one, the priest, the minister in this case, establishes something, a condition. The priest, in this case, number two, offers something that reinforces that rather linear and ordinary way of thinking. Number three introduces something completely outlandish and outside the box, and we laugh because we're surprised. And this is really why humor is a way of sparking creativity, because it points us in the direction of an unseen third way or new way of looking at something that's not either this or that.
I love it. Well, taking that the next step, I see that you have written a book with Bruce Lipton called Spontaneous Evolution. So could you go a little further on what the relationship between humor and evolution is?
Well, you know, what we're finding right now, and by the way, not just because I wrote it, but I highly, because Bruce Lipton is just a wonderful soul and a great genius, I highly recommend finding Spontaneous Evolution and reading it. But one of the key points of that book is that every stage of human evolution involves expansion of community, expansion of connection, and the next stage of human evolution is recognizing that we're all cells in the same body of humanity. And what this means, it means that rather than having the opposites, whether these opposites be masculine, feminine, liberal and conservative, and so on, nature and science, all of these, religion and science, all of these things, all of these opposites, in order for us to really emerge to the next level, these opposites have to be collapsed and integrated. So from dueling dualities to dynamic duo dance partners. And humor is the perfect dance between the linear, logical part of our minds, which is we need that, and also the intuitive, expansive parts of our minds. And in order for us to evolve our civilization, it's going to require a more advanced and sophisticated way of thinking. And humor is the gateway to that advanced way of thinking because it, as I said earlier, propels us into new possibilities rather than keeping us stuck in what we've done before. So the Swami you'll meet later, somebody wants to ask the Swami, Swami, how do you feel about wild game preserves? And the Swami said, whoa, I think they would taste terrible. I would taste terrible. You see, in our linear world, the mind wants to make a conclusion based on things that we already know, and the intuitive part of us, which is accessed by humor, offers a different interpretation, and we're going to need these new interpretations.
Wow, because we certainly are immersed in this evolutionary shift, so this work is so important at this time. And I'd love you to transition a little bit into, what's Swami's role? How did you get Swami started, or Swami start you, or how did that all begin?
Well, as a kid, I spent my deformative years in New York, and there's something about the water in New York. I think it's the water. Maybe it's the bagels. I don't know. But there's something about New York that generates a sense of humor. And I was the class comedian when I was a kid. And you're chosen for that. It's a sign from God. This is what the sign from God is. The first time that you're in the lunchroom and you make another kid laugh so hard that milk comes out of their nose. That's from us, right? So I was that kid. I was the kid that caused that all the time. And however, like everybody else who's listening, I was told to get serious. And I really... Yeah, that's funny, isn't it? And I tried. I really, really, really tried. I'm in college, I'm trying to be serious, trying to blend in. And I'm sitting in a room sociology class with 250 other very, very bored individuals. And I'm in this state somewhere between sleep and deep sleep. And out of the corner of my ear, I hear the professor, and she is talking about social mores. And she says, and who can define for us social mores? And without even thinking, I'm standing up in kind of a comedic Tourette's. What comes out of me is, when the moon hits your eye like a big piece of pie, more. And everybody laughed, but I got a D in the class because the teacher. And my humor kind of, I always used it. But then a funny thing happened. I found myself at a job doing tree work in Michigan. And one of my fellow workers said, you know, you're a writer. Let's start a newspaper. We started an anonymous humorous newspaper for the guys at the shop, and it totally changed the workplace. And I realized two things. I was at that point in my early 30s. What I realized was, number one, that humor had the power to transform situations. It allows new ideas to come in under the radar. It generates creativity and playfulness. And then number two, I was really good at it. And so the following year, I found myself starting a publication in Ann Arbor, Michigan, called Pathways. And this was one of the first publications for the holistic community. And my friend and I, who started that publication, realized that in those days, people took their spirituality very seriously, and we needed to have comedy because this was a way of, you know, bringing people back into their body out of their so prematurely ascended selves back in the body. And as I was sitting and meditating one day, this name flew into my head, Swami Beyondananda. It made me laugh because, you know, what I realized is that all of the Swamis had Ananda after their name. It was Yogananda and Satchitananda and Muktananda, etc., etc. And Beyondananda sounds funny. And so I began writing a column in 1980 for Pathways magazine, and I began syndicating the column, and then at some point when I decided that my career path involved pursuing comedy full-time, the Swami character was the vehicle, and the rest is mystery.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And for those of you that have never in person experienced Swami, you can go on his website at Wake Up Laughing and see his schedule, because or just get the watch the videos, because there's a lot of videos out where you can see the Swami, because he definitely steps into, you know, a whole different presence. So can we bring Swami on, Steve?
Sure, hold on. I think he's in the bathroom. Let me.
Okay.
Oh, no, that's not true. I am not in the bathroom. I never need to do that again. I have these followers. They're called gopis. They do it for me. I say, hey, you go pee, you go pee. I don't have to.
So, Swami, welcome, Swami. So, you know, we're living in some very interesting times, and there's been a lot of things written, people talking about 2012. Do you have any predictions for this time?
Well, I'll tell you something. I have a book coming out. It is called 2012, The Secrets Revealed, coming out in January of 2013. Now, I have to tell you something. I don't make any predictions because I don't want to jeopardize my nonprofit status. But I'll tell you this. I think that this is a time that not only will 2012 be a leap year, it will be a quantum leap year, because more and more people are waking up and wising up, and the uprising continues. And what is the uprising? It means that we are realizing that we are all connected, that we are all one with the same one. In other words, if I'm one, you're one too. And as we come to realize this connection, we actually begin to work together and create the world that we all know is possible, that we are connected and realized, and that the power of love is the most important power. And I'll tell you something. Love is more powerful than fear. And here's how I know. Otherwise, we'd be singing, "All You Need Is Fear." Fear you, yeah. We're not singing that. It's a good thing. So that is clearly a sign that we are on the right track.
I love it. So, you know, in support of this transition and this quantum uprising, you know, there are certain practices that you would recommend for all of us to do at this time?
Well, I'll tell you something. First of all, I have to say that laughter is the most important practice that you can do because it changes your state immediately. Yes? Now, you may have heard of Norman Cousins. He was a writer about 40 years ago. Diagnosed with a life-threatening disease, he checked into a hotel room with Marx Brothers movies and candid camera reruns, and he got well. And when he cured himself, the medical establishment decided they are going to study the healing power of laughter, which is kind of like, well, it works in practice, but does it work in theory? And what has been discovered is that when we laugh, it creates these hormones called endorphins, which are natural painkillers. Laughing improves immune function. Laughter lowers the blood pressure because when we laugh, it causes our blood vessels to dilate better than having them die early. So very important to practice the practice of laughter. If you can wake up in the morning, look in the mirror, and laugh in your own face, then you're able to face anything that life presents.
I love it. Now, do you meditate, Swami?
Oh, well, I'll tell you something. My entire life is a meditation. I boiled it down to two very simple practices. First of all, you know, one of the things that creates a lot of stress and negativity is, you know, we humans are so addicted to our ego, our smaller selves. So I have created a very, very simple three-word mantra to help you release yourself from the grip of the ego. Would you like to hear it?
Absolutely.
Okay, goes like this. Ego, egoing, egon. Okay, very, very powerful practice to do that mantra. As soon as you feel yourself, your ego taking over the smaller self and start feeling grouchy and grumpy and self-centered, that will help you become more higher self-centered. Yes. Now, the other thing is that the media has inundated us with so much toxic BS that our skeptic system has overflowed. And this has caused a condition called truth decay.
Oh, dear.
Okay, now, very simple way. To prevent truth decay, 4 out of 5 transcendentists recommend mental flossing every day. So if you simply, I want everybody to do this right now. I hope you're doing hands-free. I want you to put your fingers about 6 inches from each ear and then gently move it back and forth as the invisible floss dislodges the illogical logic from your brain.
It's working.
Okay?
It's working.
No more truth decay for anybody. So those are the two practices I do every day. And if you do those practices, you'll be like me, and God help you.
Well, I think you also have something on your site called the Daily Laughtative. Could you tell us about that?
Well, you know what? Many people in this serious world, you know, the world is in serious condition largely because of our conditioning to be serious. Seriously, yeah. And so sometimes we forget to laugh, creating a condition called irregular hilarity.
Oh.
Okay, and listen, if people go for long periods of time without laughing, they may end up with hemorrhoids.
Oh,
now listen, that serious hemorrhoids is an enlargement of the onus, where you feel much responsibility that the only thing you're ever able to pass is heavy judgment.
Oh.
Oh, that's terrible. And so we have
yes.
a daily lapsative. And starting next week on my Facebook page, actually it'll be starting January 22nd on my Facebook page, which is Swami Beyond Ananda. Go to Swami Beyond Ananda on Facebook, and you'll find my page. Every day there is a daily lapsative, some little joke to spark your creativity, make you chuckle. Hopefully you won't read this while you're eating, and that way you won't up-chuckle. But it will help you chuckle and restore regular hilarity, and that is what the lapsus is about. So you'll also be able to have this sent to your inbox. So if you contact me at info@wakeuplaughing.com, we can help you with your regular hilarity.
Wow, that is, it's great to have tools. And I also know that, you know, you're a transpartisan politician, and every year you give a State of the Universe address. And is it time to hear a little bit about some of those excerpts?
Well, you know what? The State of the Universe address is very, very important, okay? And, you know, of course, let me tell you right away from the start, the State of the Universe, ever-changing, same as always. The universe is purring with perfection. Oh, I'm telling you. The universe is purring. Oh, my goodness. What's going on? I don't know what's going on my music here. My music began. Everybody has background music, and I guess I have that too. So the universe is purring with perfection, and yet back here on this planet, we have the feeling of separation. We have stress and so on. We have what I am thinking is going to be a presidential year, not just a presidential year, because I think it's very important these days that we, the people of this country, choose a new precedent. And that precedent would be government of the people, by the people, for the people, where the government does our bidding and not the bidding of the highest bidder. Now, that way, and that's why I'm starting my Swami for President campaign, to help us become the leaders that we have been waiting for. You know, we have a deeply divided body politic. Half the population believes our elections are broken, and, of course, the other half believes they are fixed. So, because of that, we have to gather around the virtues and values that we all share in common to create something called heartland security. And that way, we will automatically have homeland security, because our true security is in the land of the heart. And my new slogan for the State of the Universe this year is love. If it's good enough for Jesus, Buddha, and the Beatles, it's good enough for me.
That's wonderful. Wow. So there's so many things going on in this precedential times that we need to shift, and 2012 and the upraising of our uprising, I think I should say, but you know, the uplifting, and I think you might, would you share a few other, you know, ideas on how some of us can lighten up, because it's kind of heavy out there.
Well, I think, first of all, one of the great things that we can do to enlighten up is to get the big picture, and to recognize that in the big picture, we are evolving into being one great big humanity, that we are all we're all part of the same organism. And if we reorganize our thinking to recognize that, we see the things that we have as war and unnecessary competition as an autoimmune dysfunction. And so on the local level, if we begin to gather in communities, in circles, in sacred circles, and use the differences to move ourselves forward. Because, you know, we have been in this country, we've been divided into the red tribe Republicans and the blue tribe Democrats, who spend all of their energy arguing about whether it's worse to kill the born or the unborn, yes? And meanwhile, mm-hmm. we've seen gold-collar criminals who have essentially absconded with the economy. You know, I don't know about you, but I am nostalgic for the good old days. You remember when? Remember when people robbed banks? Remember when that happened? Yeah. So in other words, while we have been divided, we have been ripped off. And so what we need now is for Red Tribe and Blue Tribe to gather in sacred circles and talk until they are purple in the face. Because only as one purple people will the peeps finally outnumber the perps.
I love that solution. What a wonderful thing to be thinking about, purple people. So if people want to access more of Swami and Steve, would you share some ways that they can find, because you've got lots of resources for people to wise up.
Well, first of all, I have something called A Course in Laughter, and this is a course that I've done a number of times, and it is available. It involves audio product, multimedia. It involves two ebooks, a workbook, and so on, and it will help people bring more laughter into their life. That is something that is available on my website, wakeuplaughing.com, or will be very soon. We have what is called the Fool Enchilada Special, which will help people immerse themselves in laughter and laugh till the sacred cows come home. We have that. And also, I am available to travel around the country and the world to present live events. So that because let's face it, there's something about bringing people together in laughter and celebration that actually raises the laugh force on the planet and may even help us heal the hole in the ozone layer. Planetary clown chakra, that's right. The ozone layer.
I'm looking forward to realizing more of my clone chakra. That's great. So you have your website. You have all kinds of products and books and CDs on wakeuplaughing.com for anyone who wants to access more of Swami and get connected on his emails to get your daily laughative, and Facebook. So there's lots of ways, and you can even do YouTube searches, and there's lots of videos that where you can truly see the Swami. So any other final comments from Steve or from Swami at this time?
Oh, I'm back. Swami has just flown off for just a minute. You know, these are really very, very interesting times, as they say, evolutionary times. And it's important for us to keep the, these have been called apocalyptic times. And the original meaning of the word apocalypse was the lifting of the veils. And as the veils are lifted, they're lifted simultaneously on some of the awful truths that we've wanted to avoid about the darker side of things. And at the same time, the veils are being lifted on spiritual practices that have been kept kind of in collective and protective custody for centuries. So we have the tools that we need to evolve. And it's very important that as things get revealed that we haven't wanted to look at, that we really look at these things in the light of love. And if we're able to, as the Swami suggested, laugh in our own face, he calls it self-facing laughter, we'll be able to acknowledge and own our own shadow and at the same time be able to help other people hold the light so that the power of love can really establish itself. This is not, you know, one of these utopian ideals. You know, if we recognize that our bodies are communities of 50 trillion cells and everybody gets along in that system. So what we would call utopia, our body would call health. So I believe that because, you know, nature has repeating patterns at different levels of complexity, that we can establish a healthy body politic just as we can establish a healthy body.
Thank you so much, Steve and Swami. This has been truly uprising is what I'm supposed to say here. I just, you have set up my day in a great way. I'm very excited to feel enlightened and brightened today, and I'm just so grateful for you being with us. And Gregory, do you have any other comments for Steve or Swami?
Well, I just like to jump in and say thank you, Steve and the Swami. And you're certainly the master of puns, and I guess that's why you're probably known as the high priest of fundamentalism. It's very, very good. And thank you for opening, helping to open my clown chakra. My clown chakra.
So,
I've gone on and I've registered on your website, wakeuplaughing.com, and I've joined your Facebook page, your Swami Facebook page. I'm so grateful for you helping to lighten our load today and add a good dose of endorphins to our bloodstream. And I know one of my teachers many years ago said a twinkle of mirth is needed on earth, and I want to thank you for adding so much twinkle dust to our day.
Well, that's very, very good. And, the thing is, what we need on earth is more mirth on earth.
More mirth on earth.
Absolutely. Well, again, thank you so much for your time and your wit and your wisdom and tickling our funny bone and, raising us up today, Steve and Swami. And thank you, everyone, for joining us, whether you're listening live or on a recorded call. And before we complete our recording part of the session, and Steve and Swami have agreed to stand for a few minutes afterward, I just want to give you a little preview of next week. We have the co-author of a brand new book. There's a new book out called Smart Trust. Stephen M. R. Covey wrote a book called, what is it called? The Speed of Trust. Thank you, Gregory. And it has sold millions of copies all over the world. His partner, Greg Link, wrote the next follow-up book called Smart Trust. And Greg and Stephen M. R. Covey, Stephen Jr. Stephen Sr. has retired. He's 80 years old. He's done a lot of great work in the world. His son is carrying on the legacy. So Greg Link and Stephen M. R. Covey have written this book together. It just came out called Smart Trust. So he'll be with us next week on Enlightened Networking. And we want to thank everyone for being part of our community, sharing, getting on our Facebook website, clicking the like button, sharing with your friends, inviting them to get registered. It is free when you get registered. You will be getting the upcoming emails that remind you of our call. So this time we're going to complete our recording session, and if you can stand by, we'll open up for a little time with Steve and Swami.